Welcome, True Believers, once again to a very special episode of Nerds on the Rocks. I am joined this week by, well, I'm stealing people this week. I'm borrowing Jason from Dual Wielding.
Hello, hello.
And I'm borrowing Daniel from a bunch of stuff I just have him show up for.
Hey.
The other Daniel, not Daniel from Dual Wielding, which gets really confusing. Or Daniel from Nerds on the Rocks, so the third
you can
Daniel.
Tell them. Oh, yeah. I was going to say you can tell them apart by their accents, but maybe
we
not.
We can tell them apart because we have British Daniel, and then we have kind of apathetic Daniel, and then we have this Daniel.
Wait, are British Daniel and apathetic Daniel not the same?
They are different. There's an American one. But, yes, I put them all together this week to discuss Marvel TV, mostly the Netflix stuff. We just finished Jessica Jones Season 1 and Daredevil hit earlier this year, and I figured with both of those shows, for better or worse, since you get all of them at one shot, we can talk about them without having to wait an entire season to finish like we do with Big Flash, Arrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, Supergirl, Gotham, and all those other shows on TV. And I mean, I was really intrigued mostly to talk about Jessica Jones because I feel like unlike Daredevil, this one hasn't had that general consensus where like most people consider Daredevil one of the best comic book shows. Jessica Jones kind of had like there are people who love it and there are people who kind of towards it. So kind of kicking off there, where do you folks fall on the Jessica Jones scale?
I guess I'll start, but I enjoyed it a lot overall. I thought it was a really good show. It had a lot of good twists. I really enjoyed like the kind of cat and mouse game between Jessica and Kilgrave, and I liked a lot of the supporting characters. But I mean, ultimately, I think Daredevil was just also a better overall show. Like the hero was more compelling, the villain was more compelling. Although both villains were very good, and Daredevil is more of a superhero show. Like Jessica Jones is almost not a superhero show. I mean, many of the key players have powers, but they're kind of subdued, for lack of a better word. Like they kind of emphasize moments rather than being the central showcase of scenes.
Yeah, I really appreciate Jessica Jones for being different, but I think I enjoyed Daredevil more. And it just seems like there's a sentiment that like Jessica Jones is like the best thing Marvel's done, and I wouldn't agree with that completely.
I will say this much, and I will get into this when we talk about both shows in greater detail. They both have similar problems to me, but I feel like Jessica Jones for the most part is a bit more consistent than Daredevil, where Daredevil has higher highs and kind of lower lows for me. So overall, I do prefer Daredevil, but Jessica Jones, I think, for the most part, is a good show with some fundamental problems, which I guess I would transition into. I find weird that they both, for me, both suffer from the same problem, which is like they both feel like they shouldn't have been 13 episodes.
I definitely agree with that.
And it's weird because unlike most network shows, especially with first seasons, you don't know how many episodes you get. Most shows are picked up for 13 episodes with a chance of being picked up for between 6 or 9 more, depending on how well they do. Where these shows were 13 episodes from the get-go, and they knew exactly how many episodes they had. And with Netflix, as far as I can tell, there's no hard and fast rule for how long an episode has to be. Like, they're generally within a range, but these episodes can go anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all this control, but it always feels like these shows could have been condensed by a few episodes and nothing would have been lost. And I hate saying that because I look at both shows and there's no episode in any of the shows where I'm going to like, that episode shouldn't have existed.
Right, but it's just there's some fat overall that can be trimmed kind of thing.
Yeah, like I look at it and I'm like, some of these subplots should have been exercised. And going with Jessica Jones, because that's freshest in my mind, the Simpsons subplot as well, near the back half, but, and I feel bad saying this because I don't remember her name. Oh, Hogarth. That whole Hogarth divorce plot, really should have been exercised from this.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with both of those. And, you know, at the very least, like, severely truncated, because they both kind of just... The Simpson one in particular, like, when it came back... Like, the Hogarth one at least tied back into the main plot eventually. But the... I guess. It was okay. I mean, I didn't have a problem with it as much, but the Simpson one kind of just felt like it came out of nowhere, and some of the stuff that happened didn't feel like it was justified. We're doing, like, full spoilers, right? But yeah. When he shoots the detective and then burns the body and stuff, that was kind of just like, why?
Even all
the meds and stuff, that just doesn't make any sense.
Like, originally I thought, oh, maybe he was Kilgraved again, but I'm like, they don't interact in the back half of the season. So I don't get, like, I know, like, he was just so incensed with killing Kilgrave that he wanted to kill people who got in his way.
I think it was also that, in his mind, the cop would just incarcerate him, and he thought that Kilgrave deserved to die.
I get, but I still don't get why he killed a cop, not incapacitate him, or why destroy the evidence.
And the cop seemed pretty, I don't know, like he'd been Kilgrave, and I don't know. I get it, but to me, that's a pretty thin justification for that character.
Actually, I will say this much. I thought a lot of characters in this show made a lot of questionable decisions, which at some point just made me go, I don't care anymore. Like, I get what she was going for, but after a while, like, the whole Jessica Jones, we can't kill Kilgrave, we can't kill... Like, he's killing so many people, and you really just want to take him alive for the chance of possibly getting this one person out of jail.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was okay, too. Like, I don't know. That makes sense to me that, you know, hope would be the one thing preventing her from just, like, opting. Well, yeah. not figuratively.
That's the problem. I mean, that's why they name somebody like Hope, because it's her one chance. It's her one hope. And when Hope dies, literally, that's when Jessica decides that she has to kill Kilgrave. It's a really cheesy stunt. But
well,
yeah,
the only reason I disagree is because I don't think it was so much that, oh, she killed Hope and now I need to kill Kilgrave, as much as, like, I think she would have killed Kilgrave before, based on her past with him, if not for the fact that if she just did it, then this girl who Kilgrave got to, who did what he did to her, and even worse, like, got her to kill her own parents, would spend the rest of her life in prison for a crime she didn't commit, because there's no way she could prove that if she just offs him. But, like, once that entire motivation is severed or made moot, then there's no reason not to go back to what she originally wanted to do, which is kill him.
Like I said, I get it, but after some time, like, the amount of bodies that she leaves in her wake and trying to capture him alive, and not necessarily her, but I guess he does, it just kind of hit on the ridiculousness. And it also got to the point where, and we'll see this in the final episode, where it's like, oh, put on headphones and he has no powers. Why didn't anybody think about that in the first 12 episodes?
Well, did you think about it in the first 12 episodes?
Yes, I actually did. Oh,
okay, well, good of you.
They kept on saying that his powers were, like, they didn't really define his powers, but it was always implied that he has to speak to the person and he has to be within proximity because he can't control anybody via the phone. So, like, why not wear headphones, or why not try headphones?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I didn't...
His powers explanation, with them trying to say it's a virus, and, like, I think it was interesting, but it doesn't really hold up if you think about it very much.
Again, it was kind of that padding where it's like they need something to do, so it's, we're going to give them a hope, a chance of, we'll find a cure so people around her can't be affected.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even really explain how she breaks free of his control. Like, they say he has her do something that she didn't want to do, But there's a lot of people have done stuff they didn't want to do, and they don't break free of his control.
Yeah, I thought they could have done a better job chalking that up to her powers or something like that, which was kind of a missed opportunity, and I agree that ended up being kind of forced or unjustified.
I think his powers are ill-defined for a while, because, like they say, like, you have to be within proximity, you have to do it every 12 hours or so. But then there's characters who, like, who cares? As far as I know, it's beyond 12 hours when he's still kind of spying on Jessica for Kilgrave.
Right. They sort of try to explain that as saying his powers increased. His dad increased his powers to 24 hours or something.
But even then, that was after that episode. But I guess they could have been trying it out at that time.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are times where it's like, and it's the same, because the one that stuck out to me the most was the guy in front of the club where he's like, stand here and don't move. And then Jessica and Nuke return like the next night and he's still standing there. And I'm like, at some point, like the 12, 6, like, it's been a full day because we've seen it's night to night. Like, his power should have worn off by now.
Yeah, there's some serious inconsistencies with his powers, which, you know, it's hard to have.
It's a really difficult power to try to ride around.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think personally speaking, I think the show would have been better off if they had him in the background for most of the season and didn't introduce him in episode 2. Because it's a very difficult power to keep consistently, and it's a very difficult power. It's such a huge and dangerous power that I really just kind of felt like it was irresponsible of the hero to kind of leave him out there for her own end.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with that. I wish he would have been in the background, and you wouldn't have even seen David Tennant till, like, unless maybe flashbacks or something, till like episode 6 or 7.
Yeah, so I mean, kind of how they did with Kingpin in Daredevil, actually, to segue over.
And that's a great, you know, counterexample where, I mean, I guess it's easier because Kingpin doesn't have powers, but instead of having a Kingpin and Daredevil kind of butt heads every other episode, it was two stories being told parallel until you knew eventually it had to cross over.
Yeah.
So you got to see Kingpin's rise to power, and you got to see Daredevil become a menace in Hell's Kitchen, and when they finally confronted each other, it was something that was earned by the show. With Jessica Jones, I mean, there's an entire episode, one of my favorites of the show, but there's an entire episode where they hang out in her childhood home together. And I'm just like, it's different for a superhero show. I mean, this is more out of James Bond, where the villain captures him and they talk and mingle and eat and drink and all that stuff. But it's like, yeah, at some point you don't know, you want these two to keep on butting heads, but she can't kill him or do anything to him until the final episode. So it makes no sense where, again, with Kingpin, it's not something that's necessary in the immediate focus of Daredevil, but it's something you know he's going to have to deal with eventually because he keeps on crossing over into that lane.
And it builds up eventually because you see his, you know, like, I forget his name, but the guy with the glasses who's like his, you know, first, like his top underling.
Not Trev. What is his name? Wesley?
Wesley?
Yeah, it's Wesley.
Wesley, and you see kind of the other crime bosses make appearances, so it kind of builds up to Kingpin. Whereas, I agree with you overall, but I do think, like, you know, Daredevil has to take two characters that are separate from each other and create a conflict between them, whereas in Jessica Jones it's a little different because the source of the conflict is in the past. These are two characters that are very familiar with each other, so have, like, in that sense, it's more okay that it's more of a season-long battle, and they do take a couple episodes to get into him, but I do agree with you that it was more impactful in Daredevil, and maybe it would have been cool to see Jessica take down, you know, a couple more minor villains or stuff. Like, there was just less play from kind of supporting characters. Like, Luke Cage was actually probably my favorite character on the show, and I'm really excited for his own show. But other than him...
I think part of the reason he works so well is they are smart enough not to have him show up every other episode.
Right,
exactly. He comes in and out of the story as needed.
So it's those characters that really you know, fill out the show and keep it interesting over like a 13 episode season, or, you know, for some other shows it's like 22, 23 episodes. But however long your show is, you're telling it over several hours, you need to have these smaller kind of confrontations and build up that kind of adds to the greater plot. And that's where I think Jessica Jones is kind of missing it. It's kind of more like a tug of war between her and Kilgrave for 13 episodes, and it gets a little bit tiresome. But also, you know, those other characters are also opportunities to flesh out the universe. So in Daredevil, you know, you had the Madam Hand or whatever from Iron Fist. That's going to be a tie-in. You have, you know, his whole, like, motivation as, on the Matt Murdock side is based out of the fallout from the Avengers. You have little seeds setting up his future seasons. Whereas in Jessica Jones, you have Luke Cage, who's awesome. But that's it. There's like one mention to the Avengers incident, but it doesn't feel like it defines the show as much. And even weirder, Jessica Jones is allegedly takes place in Hell's Kitchen, which is the same neighborhood as Daredevil. But Daredevil is nowhere to be found, no mention of him, nothing. It's especially weird when you have Luke and Jessica having dinner together and they're saying like, oh, you're the first one I've ever met. I didn't know there was anybody else like me. It's like, what? There's this fucking masked vigilante that's been around who took down, you know, this very public figure in Wilson Fisk. And it's just, I don't know, there was a severe disconnect there. And the only other character that ties over is obviously Claire Temple, who doesn't show up until the finale and just makes like cheeky references that are more directed toward the audience than serve any purpose in the actual show about how she's kind of alluding to she's helped Daredevil in the past. But that's where I think Jessica Jones, it doesn't feel like that much of a superhero show, and it definitely doesn't feel like a Marvel show or that it belongs in that universe.
I feel like just kind of, I get the discussion between Luke Cage and Jessica Jones about not meeting another one, I took that to mean literally, as in that he's never met somebody else who's had powers. Like, they mentioned the Green One, they mentioned the Hulk several times.
Yeah, I guess it's true.
And stuff. So they know of the existence of others. They literally meant that they've met nobody else who's had powers. Because Jessica says, I have, and of course she's referring to Kilgrave. So that's what I took it to mean. And to your point, and this was something that I thought they should have done, because this is what they kind of do in Daredevil for the first half of the season, is that she's a PI and she works for the law firm. I was surprised that they kind of, like, glossed over it after the first episode, and that's not something that
they should have had her going out on cases or on more investigations that, you know, feature smaller villains or you know, things like that, things that tie back into the plot, whatever they want to do, which is kind of what they did with Daredevil, right?
Yeah, or have Kilgrave actually, like, his whole point with the first case is to get Jessica's attention, is have other cases like that kind of leave breadcrumbs for her to lead towards him.
Yeah, to me it felt like a really long movie instead of a TV show, because there wasn't that, and it's sort of something I don't really like normally in TV shows, where it's like the villain of the day or whatever, but just having a new case every episode would have been nice, you know?
Yeah, or at least, you know, every few episodes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I understand. I know people have problems with case of the week stuff, or monster of the week, whatever you want to call it, but it does give you a chance to kind of, not just, if you do a case of the week, monster of the week show well, what it gives you is an opportunity to build characters. And this show builds characters, but then there's nothing for them to do outside of Jessica and Kilgrave, because that is the thing that's pushing your show forward. So, like, almost every supporting character gets pulled into this conflict at one time or another, and then they're there until the end. Like, you know, like, I thought Malcolm was probably the best developed character on this show, but, you know, his whole thing is about Jessica and Kilgrave by the end. Mm-hmm. Simpson is about...
He has a weird turn at one point near the end, too, where he gets kind of sick of Jessica. I felt like that came out of nowhere, too. But, sorry, continue.
Well, no, I mean, he got sick of her because... He wasn't sick of her. He was sick of all these things happening around him and all the things he had to do. You know, he was kind of forced to become a drug addict. And then once he cleaned up, he had to get rid of a dead body of one of his neighbors. He had to lie to her sister. He started this support group where he didn't know the truth about everything. So there's a lot of stuff where, like, after some, you know, I understand why that would mess somebody up. But again, it's one of those stuff, like the support group doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, the support group, that whole thing, I felt like it was just a total setup just so that...
for the new scene.
Yeah, basically. Because, like, the guy who, like, had his jacket stolen, it's like, okay. I mean, that sucks, but it's not as big as
yeah.
being forced to become a heroin addict.
Yeah.
Or to kill yourself, the other guy.
Like, how often can you talk about having a jacket stolen?
And I don't... Do you want to talk about the brother and sister, that whole...
That was just weird.
I did not like this subplot at all.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't mind it when she found out, but that she's so irrational that it's sometimes difficult to kind of, like, I understand, like, from a storytelling standpoint, she could be sympathetic, but they made her so irrational. Like, she finds out, like, her brother committed suicide, and her first idea is to create a mob.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. She was very crazy, but yeah, I mean.
But yeah.
I feel like that was the attempt of the show to, like, say, oh yeah, we have all these characters, you know, not just Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Kilgrave, but it just, she wasn't really, I mean, she was weird, she wasn't really likable, and then she sort of just got in the way.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, and probably not the best comparison, because people are probably going to kill me for this, but it reminded me of the Thomas Jane Punisher, where he kind of created this weird family dynamic in his apartment building just by the people around him. And, you know, like, they became his family by proxy, and you understood why he was protecting them from the things that he had to do. Where here, it's like, you have a bunch of neighbors who just seem to hate each other, who are just put in the wrong place at the wrong time, and really nothing comes of it. Like, by the end, I don't think, what was it, Ruben? Ruby?
Yeah, Ruben.
Like, I don't think anything happened with her where it's like, okay, I can see how she evolved as a character. Like, I even thought maybe her and Malcolm would get together or something. It didn't even happen.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think she's part of the problem of why we felt like it got extended a little too long. Like, it would have been a good, really good 9 or 10 episodes. Because if you take out the whole mob scene where she had him, you know, she had him tied up. So they had they could have gone right from there to, like, the police station scene at the end.
Yeah, because if you get, I mean, the problem is most of these subplots, I just feel like, I was thinking about what is her friend's name? Trish.
Yeah,
like,
Trish.
Nothing really comes of her show, or that she's famous, or her beef with her mom. It's like, it's just something in there to put in there, and then it doesn't really affect the show later on. Like, her mom, like, the whole thing with her mom just kind of works out. Like, her mom has documentations on this IGH company, and I assume that's laying the groundwork for season 2. But at the end of season 1, I'm like, okay, I don't know why you needed her to hate her mom.
And
so
I didn't feel like why it mattered. Like, it was like kind of a moment that was like, ooh, but then do I care why Jessica got her powers or where she got her powers? No, I just care what. You know, the entire show hasn't made me care. It just jumped right into her doing it. So
yeah. I mean, you know, I think it's hard because, you know, she is Patsy Walker, whatever, is a, you know, comic book character. And then the Hellcat thing, it's obviously an attempt to try to say, hey, we have, like, elements from, you know, the comics. It's not just all by itself. And then, you know, I do think the IGH stuff is cool because, you know, IGH could stand for Inhuman Growth Hormone, which I've seen some speculation about that, which is kind of cool if that's what it is, but kind of replacing mutant growth hormone. So,
well, because the Simpsons is an actual comic book character, and I just assumed that was his secret. I imagine, like most things in the Marvel Universe, is somebody trying to replicate the Super Soldier Serum and doing it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, in the comics, he's, like, he's way more powerful. He's, like, a cyborg, basically. He was like, the 60s version of Captain America. and was like, is like way stronger than Captain America in the comics. But I don't know. I didn't like immediately catch it. Like when he was introduced, I'm like, oh wow, that's that guy. I was like, just sort of, I kind of liked how it was played out for him.
Yeah, and I don't want to beat up on the show too much, because I think, you know, at the start we all said we did enjoy it, but I do think that it's easier than Daredevil to say, okay, this didn't work. This would have made a much better show if this was gone, if this happened, or if they did that. Where Daredevil, switching gears to that, I think was just easy. I think Daredevil was easy just because it had much better pacing, I felt, and it had a lot of subplots that went somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think part of it was because the conflict, again, we mentioned before, the conflict wasn't between Kingpin and Daredevil. Like, we knew that's where it had to go. But most of it was, like, Matt Murdock becoming Daredevil and then Wilson Fisk becoming this crime lord on the side. So you had stuff like, you know, you had him starting up his law firm with Foggy and, you know, getting their assistant. And they actually worked cases.
Yep.
And that would tie into what he would do as Daredevil to get evidence or to find people or to stop somebody from being killed. So it made sense. It tied into a central plot, and it pushed the story forward.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we've beaten up on Jessica Jones a lot, and I agree with what you're saying. Like, I think we all really liked it. And, yep. You know, Daredevil definitely had issues, too. I mean, I think a lot of people complained about Foggy and
Matt. Or...
Well, the girl from
Karen.
The True... Karen.
Yeah, I didn't
hear
it at all.
So
I thought you were going to say the Foggy and Matt, because, you know, there's an entire episode where he's basically screaming at Matt for keeping a secret identity from him.
No, it was more Karen and Foggy, like, they're off on their adventures. Like, I think Jason, you said you didn't love that, so. And for me personally, I didn't mind that, but the whole suit at the end, that's kind of what I minded. Like, that, I just hated the suit, you know?
As in him getting the suit or just
no,
hating the suit?
No, just, I mean, if you're going to give him the suit, make it look like movie. I thought it just looked not, I didn't think it looked good enough to, like, fit in with the movies. Like, for him to, like, just guest star in Avengers 3 or something.
Well, I think from a storytelling standpoint, it made sense. Because it's literally him going to some guy in the neighborhood and asking him to make his suit. So it makes sense that it's not, you know, like, Iron Man's a billionaire, so his suit's easy. Thor's is his armor. Captain America is an actual military propaganda suit. Black Widow just wears the cat suit.
You mentioned, actually, Iron Man, but, like, you know, if they want us to do a more legit suit, they can easily justify it by now Tony Stark's making the Daredevil suit.
Yeah. I mean, they are apparently changing it for season 2. But then if you're going to do that, just, I don't know. I just think, I just love the black outfit he had on, like, so much. Like,
I actually prefer the black outfit because, in my head, it's just like, this guy's dying. He doesn't care what he's wearing.
Yeah. And he wants to basically be a ninja, so...
Yeah, having
like,
a
in
good
that
red
universe, time. There's no Ronin, or, like, he's not, like, stealing someone else's thing, so... He'd wear black, it makes sense.
Yeah, but aside from the... kind of going back to beautiful and Jessica Jones, I think one of the biggest things, and I understand that this isn't the point of the show, and I get that, but there's ways to do it. I really didn't like the fight scenes, the fight choreography, and Jessica Jones.
Yeah, it wasn't that great. I mean, to be fair, like, they didn't really have a lot of people who could fight. Like,
yeah,
and Simpson and Trish were the only people who were trained. I mean, Luke and Jessica are just so strong, they're kind of just brawlers.
Yeah, and I think, and like I said, I understand that, but I also think there's a way to do that, where, like, people know how to fight in the sense that they know how to fight. They won't have a proper... like, you can make it rough and nasty looking, where this was just a poor... and again, you know, it also hurts, you know, she has superpowers, like, she'll punch somebody, and she'll be flung across the room or something like that. So, there wasn't that much great fight choreography, but it was painful, especially coming from Daredevil, which had some amazing fights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, it was definitely lacking.
But again, I mean, Daredevil's more I agree with you. It's not as visually flashy, but I think there's...
Going back to a point we mentioned earlier, where, you know, Daredevil was about him, more about a superhero, more about fights and stuff like that. The problem with Jessica Jones is, like, what it's trying to be, which I think is more of a modern noir, it doesn't really go into that more than stepping his toe in the first episode. Like I said, if the show is more about her tracing clues, finding people, you know, and doing the PI stuff, then, like, the stuff, like, the fight scenes wouldn't stand out because that would be the backdrop where, like, the norm elements feel like it's a backdrop, and the fight element seems like it's a backdrop. Like, there's nothing that's really, like, okay, this is what Jessica Jones is.
I think the Luke Cage scene where he, like, it comes out of the burning building was cool. Like, that was... Although, for him not to immediately drop on the floor was kind of weird. The fight scenes weren't necessarily good, but I think, like, the choreography of the people who are mind-controlled was really good. Like, the way they had the people on the docks and, like, all that stuff was pretty good. It just was mainly any fight involving Jessica Jones didn't look great to me.
Yeah, and I think they could have hammered home the point that she doesn't need training. I mean, and this isn't something they touch on in the movies, this is something they touch on elsewhere. It's sometimes one of those sticking points between Iron Man and Captain America when they first meet. It's because Captain America has super strength, but he's also trained in hand-to-hand combat, where Iron Man doesn't value that because he's a guy in a giant tin suit, so he doesn't need to necessarily know how to fight.
And it's something to touch on Supergirl.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the very first episode.
That's something they touched on actually when the Arrow and Flash crossed over. Like, Flash may be faster, but just having powers doesn't necessarily mean that you can't get your ass whooped. So, and I imagine that's also going to be something that's going to be a sticking point for Batman v Superman. Like, yes, you can have power, but having knowledge of how to control your body, how to use your enemy's momentum against them would also help. But Jessica Jones wasn't about that, and, you know, because the only person who really had training was Trish, and that was something that really went away really quick. Like, it was one scene, and I thought they'd bring it back more, because it was actually pretty nifty to see her kind of get the self-defense training.
I agree. I think it was kind of a missed opportunity to not really feature her more in more action during the season. It was really, I mean, at the very end, and... Can't remember, there might have been one or two minor scenes, but for the most part, she was just on the sidelines.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything else you folks want to talk about? Oh, I will say this, I'd be reminiscent if I didn't, because I always complain about the fact that modern TV shows don't really bother with openings and intros. I absolutely love the intro for both of these shows.
I agree. I particularly like Daredevil's, but they're both good.
I like Jessica Jones. I like the style of Jessica Jones just because of how fluid it looked and stuff like that. But Daredevil was great as well. And I do find it ironic because of the comic book shows we have on TV, there are only two who don't need them. Because even Netflix skips over the intros when you binge watch it. So we see the intros like three times. Like me.
Yeah. I mean, I think I saw Jessica Jones's intro twice because we watched it in 2 days. So
yeah. Because, you know, you watch Arrow, Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, all those, it's just a quick logo or something. And it's like, yeah, but Jessica Jones and Daredevil have like a full minute-long intro. And I'm like, these are awesome. Why don't more shows do this?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the one thing I would have liked to see more of, and this is probably just maybe why I like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. more than you do, Earl, is I would have liked to see, like, some inklings of Iron Fist. I mean, apparently in the comics he has some relationship with the Hogarth character. So just mentioning, like, oh yeah, you know, like if she just was like, well, you know, I'm defending, you know, Mr. Rand, I don't know, something like that would have been nice. I mean, I think part of it is they're still deciding if they want to do Iron Fist.
Well, I mean, they've come out and said as much that they're doing Iron Fist. And I mean, like, if you think back, Daredevil had a gigantic Iron Fist subplot. So it would, you know, like, even if you don't do it, you can still have it build up elements in the world. And you know, to Jason's point, it is weird that more so than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the MCU or whatever, Daredevil and Jessica Jones are really in a little chunk of New York City. Like, they're a very tiny part of a huge city. It's weird that there isn't more interactions between those two, especially since you know the end game is for them to do the Defenders TV show. Like, honestly, I thought that scene where, like, she's being arrested for killing Kilgrave and, you know, that her attorney comes in. I honestly thought it would be Matt Murdock.
See, that would be cool. Or like, or if Murdock was the opposition lawyer to, or is that what you mean? When?
Well, I mean that could happen. But I honestly thought, like, when they said your attorney, I thought it would be Matt Murdock because, you know, like, we have the scene where Kara sees that Jessica was arrested on the news. She knows Daredevil. I mean. I just assumed that, because, like, the Kira stuff was neat, but it didn't go anywhere as far as connecting the two shows.
No, yeah, it felt so just, like, forced and, like, winky-winky, and I mean, it was cool to have a character, but it was so unsubstantial.
It was very, you know, I think it's trying to reflect Coulson from the early Marvel films, like, from Iron Man 1 and, stuff like that, where it's like, you know, oh, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D., though, that makes a lot more sense to say it that way and stuff. Like, it's like just trying to, it's for the audience and didn't really serve any purpose, but I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. And it will be interesting because they already said that UK just take place in Harlem, which is still in New York, but further up. So I'm kind of curious to see how that all ties together, especially being that with AF, it does still seem like him and Jessica Jones has a relationship. So I'm curious how much Jessica Jones will be in Luke Cage.
Yeah, I hope she pops up at least once, you know, especially since, you know, they're going to have a relationship eventually on the Defenders, but it'd be cool to see that develop over more time, which is something that Marvel in general doesn't do all that well. You know, like their villains, especially, we've seen. They've done a great job on these Netflix shows and even on the ABC shows, but, you know, they don't spend enough time developing longer term relationships all the time. So hopefully it works out.
Hopefully it does. So, yeah, I think those are the Netflix ones. Just really quickly, we can touch on their two TV shows. Network TV shows, I should say. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is currently airing its third season. And Agent Carter, which will begin its second season in just about a month from now. So, okay, I will be honest. I made no bone about this. I pretty much dropped off the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. boat during season 2. And I dip in every now and then. I've seen, like, 2 episodes from this season. It's probably not the best ideas because I have no idea what's going on half the time. But yes, I sat in at their panel at New York Comic Con, and I saw the second or third episode of season 3, and then I saw the most recent one, which was the one with S.H.I.E.L.D. turning on the other agency while Ward tries to break in and find Ash? Andrew? Is that his name?
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not an expert here, so what do you two, what's the big deal with S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3? Is it an improvement? I've heard mixed bags about whether it's better or worse than Season 2 so far.
I think 2 was a stronger season, personally. I think 3 is still better than 1. There's still more going on, and it's cool to see more powers on the show. But it feels a little less consistent week to week, a little bit cheesier. The core plot driving the season-long arcs doesn't feel quite as tight yet. Now, they're still very early, obviously, in their 22-episode season, so we'll see how, you know, it comes about in the back two-thirds. Like, it could very easily pay off. But to this point, I felt like season 2 was pretty strong, like a pretty consistent build-up with only one or two hiccups on the way, whereas, you know, season 3 is much more uneven. But it is cool to see more Inhumans and powers and things.
Yeah, I mean, I think season 2 is what you'd point to as the best season for sure. I mean, I think what could influence it is, you know, we have Civil War coming out, and what they did with season one, where Captain America, Winter Soldier, sort of basically jump started season two. That could happen again, maybe, where they're just sort of waiting for that to happen. But yeah, it's been a little disappointing season three so far. I don't think Daisy gets like a chance to shine as much. Like, if you look at her Twitter, Instagram, she's such a, like, has a great personality, and then, like, she's just sort of dour and sort of doesn't have a lot of room to do much on the show.
Okay, that, I mean, what I've seen of season three, I was going to be one of my, and I guess it's a complaint because I'm watching sporadically, but there does seem to be way too many characters, because, like, the two episodes I've seen, they had
Blue Girl.
Can you not hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, I guess we lost Jason.
Yeah, I can't hear. Is he?
Can we hear Jason? Hello? And you?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, you're still here. I didn't know. Okay, so he's just the one.
I see, like, the dots. I don't know if that means, like, he's trying to connect or something.
It means that they're trying to call back.
Okay.
Like, it means, like, somebody's probably broke. But, yeah, I don't know. Okay, while we wait, I can just talk about my stuff. So yeah, what I found is that I do think there's, it feels like there's too many characters in season three, because of the two episodes I've seen, it's like they have to splinter off the group into so many little subgroups just so that they all have something to do. And even with this episode, like with May and Lincoln, I think is his name, is that the new addition to the team?
Yeah,
like they're just on a plane doing nothing for most of the episode. Like, literally, it's him talking to her and her being quiet for, like, half of the episode. Coulson's doing his thing. I forget what Daisy, Sky, Quake is doing. Fitzsimmons are doing their own thing. And I don't even know what Mac was doing. Oh, I think Mac was just questioning if Coulson was having sex.
Yeah, it's definitely a little all over the place. I mean, I really like May, but I think they don't really need her, because I think Daisy does what she does, and then
and
also
so does
has
Mark.
The... Yeah.
And Bobby,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, and Bobby, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, kind of to that point, that is, you know, that is one of the intentions right now, is to spin off Bobby and Hunter into their own series called Most Wanted, but we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, I mean, what are the core cast? We have Bobby, Hunter, May, Sky, Coulson, Mac, Fitzsimmons, and Ward still around, even though he's not on the good guy's side. Did I miss anybody? Oh, and I guess Zinkin just joined the team as well.
And there's another Inhuman who can melt metal or something. But he's sort of a minor character, so.
Well, I'm talking about just the core kind of the SHIELD team.
Yeah.
It's a rather big team, which again would make sense. I mean, Ward kind of does it again. From what I've seen, Ward kind of does this, where Ward isn't necessarily a focal part of any episode. Like, he's not even in every episode. From what I gather, he has a very dedicated following on social media. A very dedicated following on social media.
Really? I don't really... I kind of wish they killed off his character in season
yeah,
two.
Yeah,
I thought he was easily
him.
The worst character in the second season. And
well,
he's gotten better, but still, I don't know. There's not.
I think it's one of those things where it's like... It's kind of the same problem I had with Jessica Jones. There's only so long you can keep your villain around without your heroes looking incompetent. Where, like, you know, they've been trying to kill, I believe they've been trying to kill Ward for most of this season. Like, they sent Mac after him to spy on him, and this is something that has happened way too often when I've seen S.H.I.E.L.D. It's like, the heroes just start shooting stuff before anything happens. Like, he gets found out, and he tries to shoot Ward, and that fails. It's like when Bobby was undercover in season 2, and, like, the first chance she gets, she throws her cover to save, Simmons?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, I think if Bobby and her British guy, can't remember his name, if they got spinned off, that would help a lot. Yeah, Hunter. I don't know. I mean, I'm torn on Ward. I agree, like, that it makes them look incompetent, but I think one of the issues I have with Jessica Jones is just like, oh yeah, at the end, they kill the villain, like, in every other Marvel thing, you know, like Guardians, they kill him, Iron Man, they all die. It's like, it's kind of nice to have a recurring villain sometimes, but I understand.
I feel like it was earned here, whereas, like, maybe, it, you know, so like Guardians, for example, to use your other example, like, it's over so quickly, you know, you don't really get to see much of Ronan, whereas we saw a lot of Kilgrave and, you know, Jessica finally, like, that, the killing him being the end of her arc makes a lot of sense. Whereas, to your point, like, the Loki's easily been the best villain in Marvel's movie side, right? And I would think Kingpin's going to be back at some point. You know, they kept him, he's alive in Daredevil, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, kind of as an example of that, and, you know, it depends on some people, it goes either way, but it got, like, how to use Malcolm and Arrow, where I think he was a good reoccurring villain because he didn't show up every week.
Right.
And the heroes didn't know he was alive, where Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they're actively going after Ward from time to time, and they can't get him.
Yeah.
It's always a staple of the comic book genre. It's the same reason why doesn't Batman kill the Joker, or why don't they improve the security at Arkham or whatever? Like, at some point, you need a villain who kind of reoccurs. But I do think, as far as I can tell, and like I said, I dropped off halfway through season 2, so maybe this happened. As far as I can tell, they've never actually outsmarted or outwitted or outmaneuvered Ward, where they had captured him or something like that. So it's not even like the heroes are doing stuff and then he has like a backup contingency plan. It's like they just can't catch him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, depending on how much you want, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to tie into the MCU and to comics and stuff, it's like, part of the fan base wants Ward to turn into an actual character from the comics. You know, like, maybe Taskmaster or something. Because he does seem like he's never surprised by anything. He's always, he always seems to have the upper hand. And, you know, if he was sort of a mercenary, not necessarily a bad guy. But I think one thing people are worried about is if he, like, gets redeemed or something. But it seems like that's not going to happen.
I'm glad it seems like that sailed. And they kind of flirted with it for a while in the second season, but I'm glad that seems to be off the table because that was too cheesy.
I really think, I mean, it's almost impossible at this point. The only way he's going to be redeemed is if he gets killed trying to save somebody, and then he's dead. Like, there's no redemption arc. Like, he tried to kill Fitzsimmons. He's turned on the team like 50 times now. They can't trust him. There's no reason to believe anything he says. I don't know. But there are still, like I said, there's a huge social media backing for this character where people want to believe he's a good guy. So it is what it is. On the other end of the spectrum, Agent Carter, which is a show I really like, but at the same time it has the same problem I have with Daredevil and Jessica Jones, where I feel like it's an 8-episode show that should have been 6. And I don't know what it is about these shorter shows where they just don't know what to do with the middle portion of the show. But Agent Carter just felt like the same show for like 3 or 4 episodes where it's like she was looking for this thing, she gets hints, she gets there, it gets destroyed. The agency she works for is looking for somebody. They just miss her. Rinse and repeat for the next 2 or 3 weeks. And then finally, like, when you have to start ramping up for the climax, that's when things start moving. So I'm kind of looking forward to this. Though this has one of my least favorite tropes of any TV shows or movies in general. I understand why, but I hate when, the first season took place in New York. The second one takes place in California. But almost the entire cast is going to California anyhow.
Isn't it just her and Jarvis? And
no. It's the guy, this the love interest from the first season,
yeah.
Suso, and it's Chad Michael Murray.
Really? Both of them?
I don't know if he's in California, but he's in the show still as a as a main character. So yeah, it's like Saved by the Bell or College where they all ended up going to the same exact college. Even though like in high school you know that they shouldn't have because Screech is much more intelligent. And Slater probably would have got a sports scholarship to any college he wanted between playing wrestling, football, and anything else he did. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's just like, it's kind of ridiculous that everybody happens to be in California the next time they need to do this show. But whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really get why they need to
move
the
California.
Show to L.A. at
yeah,
all.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to change the setting. They probably sat down and realized, like, what can we do with Jessica? What can we do with Agent? Because you can't do the same thing with season one. It's going to be really weird for her coworkers not to respect her after everything she did in season one and in Captain America. It was really hard to believe that in Captain America. I mean, and Agent Carter season one. There we go.
So she's still going to be working for S.H.I.E.L.D. Or, like, I guess it's... they going to be talking about the formation of S.H.I.E.L.D. or is it more of her still working for, like, the...
It looks like she's
I hope so.
With,
I mean...
She's still working with Stark?
Yes. I mean, Stark's supposed to... Like, I would think that, you know, they kind of closed the book on the fallout of the first Avengers stuff in the first season. So I hope they start to build up now. And in this season, we really start to see the beginning of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they've really said or hinted at that at all. But, like, as a fan, that's what I'm hoping to see. Especially since there's no guarantee there's going to be season 3. I mean, it was kind of surprising that the show got renewed for season 2. So.
Oh, we don't touch that because I was surprised when the show got renewed for season 3. I won't be surprised when it gets renewed for season 4. If it gets renewed for season 5, then we'll see. I think
so far, you know, the shows have done a good job finding a niche. I mean, there's still obviously room for improvement on S.H.I.E.L.D., but S.H.I.E.L.D. can do different things than the Netflix shows, or Agent Carter can do different things, and the Netflix shows have been an awesome way to bring in, like, a really darker take while still being in that universe.
Well, it's not even that. It's more or less that they don't really do well for the network, which is why I find it weird that they're focusing on potentially 3 different spinoffs. But as a quick aside, I also think, I'm hoping anyhow, if it was something that was touched on in Agent Carter Season 1, I hope they kind of go more into the Black Widow program, because that was something that kind of came up in the... There was that, and there was something... What else was the other subplot that came up at the end of... Season 1. It was like some Hydra's technology that they were working on. So hopefully those two form the backbone of Seasons 2. I will also say, and I'm really kind of sad about this, it seems like people drove her off of social media.
Who?
Really?
Yeah.
Haley Atwell? Like,
yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Like, she's no longer on... She's no longer on Twitter or Instagram or anything like that. All she tweeted was like, "I'm taking a break from social media." Some people might just want to take a break. Some people also said it might have been related to this is weird thing people do with like mom and dad to people. Like when they'll say something like "mom, dad," and like want them saying they want them to be their parent or something like that. And
I still don't understand that. Like the first
I don't either.
The first comment, like, first tweet on anyone, any celebrities is like, mom, yeah, or dad, usually. It's like, I really don't get it. But, yeah, I mean, that sucks. I mean, I think one of the coolest things that Marvel's done is, like, the the charity they did for the Dub Smash.
Yes, that was awesome.
I thought that was awesome, you know?
I thought they'd go back the behind-the-scenes dynamic between the groups. It's something you also see with Fashion Arrow groups. And it makes sense because I don't think Agent Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. film in proximity of each other. They might do it in season two more because they're in California. But, Agents of Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow all filmed in Vancouver. So they're also pretty good with the supernatural people because almost every CW show films in Vancouver. It's kind of neat to see these real-world people and kind of see them be friends behind the scenes. And I think social media is great. You can still hate people, but it's easy to kind of fringe interest in each other on social media. So it was kind of disappointing that they ran her off. But yes, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has its final two episodes this week, December 1st, and then December 9th is December 8th, I should say, is the mid-season finale. Agent Carter, if I'm not mistaken, premieres January 5th with a two-hour double feature at 9 p.m. on ABC. And just before we go, we'll touch on, we know that Marvel is working on Daredevil Season 2, which at this point I believe would be the next Netflix show. I believe it started filming before Luke Cage did.
It's going to be Daredevil Season 2.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. They already released a teaser for that. Daredevil Season 2, then Luke Cage sometime next year. I don't know, I mean, technically the next show should be Iron Fist, but nothing has come of that. And I feel like Jessica Jones was already in production by the time, like this time last year. I could be wrong, though.
Yeah, I mean, they could do, I mean, they could switch and do a Punisher show, or they even could do Jessica Jones season 2. They might just delay it longer.
They've pretty much said that Jessica Jones season 2 won't happen until after Defenders, so.
Well, I mean, they can change their minds.
Yeah,
But as far as I know, Jessica Jones, I think by this point last year, we had known Kristen Ritter would be in it.
Yeah.
And, like, right now, we don't have any anybody cast or anything stated for Iron Fist as far as a cast or production crew. So I can't really imagine. It's possible, but I just can't imagine that would be next year if we're not ready in motion with that. And on the network TV side, we mentioned before that ABC is looking at a possible Most Wanted spinoff with Bobby and Hunter from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This one's very difficult to read because they also were interested in this last season, and that went nowhere. So, we'll see.
Yeah, I can't see ABC doubling down on that when Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. don't do that well.
The only thing I can see is that it's an in-house property that they probably, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is guaranteed a fourth season just because they need to get over 80, I think it's 88 episodes for syndication. Because once that's in the bag, you'll get money off the back end for years and years. I mean, Warner Brothers still makes a ton of money off of Friends, and that ended a decade ago.
Yeah, I'm sure they're making money on even, like, digital stuff like Netflix and Hulu.
Yeah, and again, they're not losing money because they get everything related to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it's an in-house property. I always look at it from a network standpoint. It's like, I just don't know where you would even put another Marvel show on right now because you don't touch Thursday. Wednesday's their comedy night. You could potentially do Monday, but right now Monday's so thick with competition. And I'm not even just talking about other comic book shows. Monday's the most difficult night of the week because you have football for half the season. You have Big Bang for half the season. You have, you know, The Voice and Dancing with the Stars and all this other stuff. You could do Sundays, but again, Sundays is one of those weird nights, especially with cable competition. Nobody does Saturday nights anymore because nobody watches TV on Saturday nights. You could probably do Friday nights if you do, like, an hour of comedy and then you do, like, an hour spinoff afterwards.
I feel like Friday nights are pretty tough for TV, too.
Oh, it's very tough for TV, but just, like ABC still does new programming on Friday night. So
I feel like a show on a Friday night is pretty much being sent out to wither and die.
Well, it depends on expectations. Like, kind of going into the other one, like, I could see Wrecking Crew being a Friday night show because if it's a half-hour comedy, which I think is what they're billing it as, that's something that fits in with like Dr. Ken and Last Man Standing, where you don't necessarily need, you know, like, it's not a huge investment and you don't need 15 million people watching it. Like, you can do Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. numbers on Friday night and still be considered a big hit on Friday nights. Hmm. So yeah, the other one is Wrecking Crew, which is, like, I actually think the idea is great. It's a cleanup crew. It's what happens after the heroes do battle and all that comes with it. It's a great comic. There's several comics with the same concept, but Wrecking Crew, I believe, is the original. And then there's one that we know nothing about, but it's the John Ritchie ABC show. We know nothing about it other than that he pitched it for the last season, and as far as I know, it's still in production. So yeah, I mean, that's that for the state of Marvel TV. It's a good state. I think they have, you know, as much as we said about Jessica Jones or whatever, they do have a nice state. They have four shows currently out there. They are, for the most part, very tonally different. We have a kind of modern noir story. We have a, you know, a action-y spy thing with Agent Carter. We have pure action with Daredevil. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a show. I actually don't even know how to describe it, because it's not spies anymore. It's kind of like girl throughout in super teens. It's,
to me, it's like an X-Men show mixed with, like, if the X-Men were more government-based.
But they're not even a government organization anymore.
Well, I mean, yeah. S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of, and the other organization they work for, they were working with, was a government organization, wasn't it?
That yeah, but was. It sounds like they're not going to work with them anymore.
I don't think so. Not after this past week's episode. But yeah, like I said, the only difference, and I always hate comparing them, but it's easy because they're the two biggest. I would say the only difference, the big difference between Marvel and DC's comic TV output, is that Marvel really has one night. And I think that kind of sometimes swallows up all their press, because like Monday DC has, Tuesday DC has, Wednesday DC has, starting in January, Thursday DC will have, where it's like you're talking about them for most of the week as far as TV goes, where like Jessica Jones will be talked about for a few weeks and then you kind of disappear, because your assumption is most people watch it during its opening weekend. The same thing with Daredevil, you don't hear people talk about Daredevil as much, and that was only April. But you'll hear about Gotham, you'll hear about Flash, you'll hear about Arrow, you'll hear about Supergirl. You don't hear much about iZombie, even though I would go to bat for that show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you need to, though, either.
Well, I don't think you need to, but as far as, like, as far as kind of, like, getting, I personally still think DC's TV output is better than Marvel's, but as far as, like, a normal conversation goes, like, you'll hear Daredevil come up when Daredevil's out, but you still kind of go back to people talking about Flash being a good show, or, you know, the first two seasons of Arrow or something like that.
Because I think people still talk about Daredevil in that way also.
I mean, it could be the circles I run in. I feel like it doesn't. Like, I feel like the most I've heard Daredevil since Daredevil premiered was when Jessica Jones premiered, because then it's an easy comparison to make.
Yeah, I think I still think the Netflix model does it a disservice. It's part of it, I guess.
I think it does it a disservice in the sense that, kind of going back to where we were before, at the very beginning of the show, is that you build your show differently. Like you said, you know, case of the week, monster of the week stuff aren't necessarily fun, and they don't really make sense in the Netflix model because you assume that people are going to binge watch. But network shows, you do that stuff to build, one, because you have to pace yourself for 22 weeks or whatever, but you also get to build up characters and moments and set pieces, and you don't necessarily have one single shot driving the entire vehicle. Like Arrow and The Flash, I guess, famously kind of do, they have like one arc in the beginning, and then like around episode 9, which is the mid-season finale, they have a arc that's going to push them throughout the second half of the season. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that's the same thing. Last year, the mid-season finale was the emergence of Inhumans, and then that pushed season 2 for the back half. I imagine they already teased that the back half of season 3 will be defined in the mid-season finale in 2 weeks, because there's going to be two twists you won't see coming, and stuff like that. But Anyhow, we've been doing this for an hour. I want to thank Jason and Daniel III. and yeah, check out Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It airs Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. on ABC. Jessica Jones and Daredevil Season 1 all on Netflix right now, streaming for you to watch. And Agent Carter premieres on ABC, 9 p.m. on January 5th. So, for Jason, Daniel III, and myself, this has been Arizona Rocks.